Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, good morning. It's Sunday, March 29th, 2009, and this is Solder Smoke 104. All right. Going to open up this morning with a bit of Rome travelogue. Last weekend we had the Rome Marathon here. I of course, did not run in it, but we went over and watched it. Part of the race came right down along the Tiber River, which is very, very close to our house, and we, about 10 o'clock in the morning, took a walk down, watched the runners go past. They were about the six-mile point and were looking quite good at that point, but we then walked a little bit across Rome and ended up near the Colosseum where the finish line was. We managed to watch the winner go past, a very, very fast guy from Kenya, amazing, and then we watched the middle of the curve group come through, and man, I'm telling you, they looked a lot better at the 6 mile mark. A lot of them were really, really hurting, and well, the end of the marathon. I'd never really been around the end of it like that, and it gets pretty disgusting, frankly, and made me think that it's nice to have a hobby like ham radio that that doesn't involve quite so much agony and agony. It was a lot of fun watching the Rome Marathon. It was great. You know, we thought that in London we never would have been able to get that close to a lot of the real important action of the marathon. A lot more people there in London, I guess, looking. A lot more crowds, lot bigger crowds along the route. But in Rome, it was all quite kind of almost small townish, and we were just standing right there watching the winners go by. Great fun, and of course, really beautiful in all the in all of Rome's historic glory. There, it was really great watching them go past the Colosseum. A lot of fun. Speaking of historic glory, I'm happy to report that Billy, our co-host here on Solder Smoke, has completed a really major and exciting class trip, 3-day trip. Kind of hard on his mom and me, but he had a great time with it. The fifth grade in his school always does ancient civilizations, including of course the Rome civilization, and they take a 3-day class trip to Pompeii and Herculaneum, the two cities that were destroyed by the eruption of the Vesuvius volcano. And as part of the trip, they start out by climbing Vesuvius, and the whole fifth grade class goes right up to the top, right into the crater, and it really looked like a lot of fun. I was wishing that I was a parental chaperone on that one, but Billy said it would have been uncool, so I stayed home. And then they went into Pompeii and did pretty extensive a tour of the ruins of Pompeii, and then on to Herculaneum and home. So a great trip, and the kind of stuff that you get to do when you go to elementary school in Rome, Italy. A lot of fun. Let's see, in terms of radio projects here, not too much on the radio side, but on the electronic side, things have been happening here. And let me explain. Our discussion last time around about minimalist QRSS and getting the transistor count on the transmit side down to 1 spurred an email from New Zealand. Kevin, ZL3KE, wrote in with a very interesting email about what he called minimalist computing, and he talked about how he's been trying to make use of kind of software that isn't filled with additional unnecessary bells and whistles, just sort of bare minimalist software and even minimalist hardware, using some of the older computers to run programs for ham radio. And I reminded Kevin that even with the older computers and the minimalist stuff, you're still in the tens of millions of transistor counts, and he acknowledged that. But still, his idea about, you know, using some of the older, simpler equipment caught my attention, and I looked down on the floor, literally in the corner here by the operating table in the ham shack, and there was my old Toshiba 400CS Satellite Pro laptop. I really like this laptop, and there's a sentimental connection. When we first got married, my wife wanted to have her own computer, so we went down to a little used computer shop there on Route 7 in Northern Virginia, and picked this thing up, and it worked great for years. And we had a little outboard modem. It's got a Pentium 75 megahertz processor in it, but hey, it's a Pentium. And it looks like I beefed up the RAM, and I think we've got about 40 megs of RAM in there. And in 2006, I may have discussed this on Solder Smoke, but it died with a horrible grinding noise from the hard disk, and it really went toes up in a very spectacular, audible way. And the wind blows in Rome and knocks some books off the shelf. Anyway, I've been I had in mind to fix this thing, and I actually went out and bought a replacement hard drive, but then I quickly discovered that replacing the hard drive on a computer is not just a simple matter of popping it in there and off you go. I mean, it's not like putting in a new floppy disk or something like that. There's formatting to be done, and there's partitions to be partitioned and all that stuff. Anyway, I got tired of it, as I often do with computers, and I just put it off in the corner and didn't do anything with it until the arrival of the email on minimalist computing from Kevin, ZL3KE. So he pushed me into old computer repair, and I frequently thought about cursing him for this, but I didn't. But I thought about it, because every time I start working on computers, it turns into an exercise in frustration and pain. I've said many times that I'm really very much an analog kind of radio amateur, simple equipment, minimalist, QRP, that kind of stuff. And of course, once you get into computers, you've kind of moved away from that in a big way. But I wanted to get this thing going. Kevin gave me the idea, so off we went. My first thought was Linux, because Linux is the rage now. And I have Linux running on my old, not so old, the EPC computer here. The real cheap, low-level brand of computer. Hold on a second. I got to get the brand right, because I'm going to talk bad about them in a second. Hold on. E-Machines. Yeah, that's the one. E-Machines. That's the one I'm going to talk bad about. I don't do this often, but these guys deserve it. My E-Machines machine crashed, I guess, about a year ago. And It was some pretty spectacular software thing in there. Nothing, no hardware problems, because I revived it through the use of Linux. But then I tried for weeks and months to get the folks at E-Machines to send me replacement Windows software, because they don't send you that when you buy the E-Machines machine. And they said they would. They promised 3, 4, 5 times, and never did. I actually took my credit card number, too. Never sent it. So that's the end of E-Machines from me, and I'll never deal with them again. I had a real bad customer service experience. And, well, just mention it here on the show, it feels a bit cathartic. You know what I mean? All right. Anyway, enough of that. I got Linux running on the E-Machines thing, and it works pretty good. And I've been talking to some real Linux fans who listen to the show Our man in Dubai, Ron Sparks, AG5RS, is a real Linux aficionado. So that was my thought. I figured, well, I'll put Linux into this Satellite Pro once I get all the problems worked out. Of course, it's not as easy as that because when I turn the thing on, it does absolutely nothing. So Kevin and I went through this process, and he was really great. He was my coach and mentor all the way from New Zealand. He sent me words of wisdom, advice, encouragement, when necessary, computer files. First, we got the A. First, I found a bootable disk on the internet, created a floppy disk, got the A prompt. Then Kevin coached me on how to get the partitioning done and the formatting of the C drive. Then we got the C prompt. So we went from A to C. Now, to get any kind of software in there, I needed to use a CD-ROM. I had the CD-ROM for the computer, but didn't have the software to get it going. Kevin talked me through that, sent me a few files. Boom, we had D. Now we have A, C, and D prompts. And I started rummaging around the shack, and I found that I had a legit copy of Windows 3.1 on a CD-ROM. So I had looked at Linux, and everything, you know, ironically, all the Linux stuff seemed way too big for the RAM and the hard drive that I've got in this thing. The hard drive that I got is only about, I think, 4 gigs. 4 gigs of hard drive. It was a real simple, cheap hard drive for the laptop, and only about 4 gigs of hard drive space. So that didn't seem enough for a lot of the Linux flavors that I've seen floating around. Certainly not enough for the Zandros variety that I have in the shack. And there were a number of really kind of Linux light or skinny Linux and all that kind of stuff on the web. But man, you really need to speak Linux to figure out how to get that stuff going. And I don't. So Windows 3.1, it is and was, and in it went. And man, this thing works like a charm. It really works great under Windows 3.1. I'm very happy with it. A lot of old, familiar software blasts from the past came back to me. I have a great astronomy program called Distant Suns that I've kept the CD-ROM all these years from the mid-90s, and I've never been able to run it because I haven't had a Windows 3.1 machine till now. But this thing runs under Windows 3.1 and works great, and I can get, you know, sky charts and locations of the planets and everything else. Really great stuff. For QRSS, I fired up the great transmit program from ON7YD, his QRSS transmit program, and I think I'm going to use that to kind of spice up my beacon messages. Instead of just having a constant repetition of my call sign on FSK, I will try to put some messages in there. I don't know, maybe weather reports or something from Rome. And other applications, I really want to get a good satellite tracking program in there, and I was really disappointed to find that I can't find not a single copy of my favorite old satellite tracking program, Orbitz 2 by Roy Welch. Orbitz 2 by Roy Welch. If any of you guys have this thing, please send it to me. I really like that program, and I bought it from AMSAT, but then it's off on a dead hard drive somewhere. And so if you have Orbitz 2 by Roy Welch, please shoot it to me, and I'll load it in the Satellite Pro. It seems appropriate that the Satellite Pro should have a satellite tracking program in there. Anyway, that was my software-hardware adventure for the week. Thanks very much to Kevin ZL3KE for being the minimalist computing guru. Great stuff, Kevin. Thanks a lot. Let's see. What else we have here? Solar power. I found, I guess, Kevin's minimalist computing, all this discussion of minimalism, got me thinking about solar power a bit. And then I came across, via Hackaday, an amazing video about making solar panels using the sugar from donuts and T. Guys, I'm not kidding about this. This is for real. The video is up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com blog page. Check it out. It's an amazing video. The kids who put it together did a really great job. It's artistically very well done and scientifically very interesting. And there is Maria Patricia. Say good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Maria Patricia arrives with small computing device in hand. What is that, a Nintendo DS? Yeah, all right, Nintendo DS. She's got the Nintendo DS going. And she can, she can text message with it to her brother, right? Yeah, she's sending text messages across the house on the Nintendo DS. All right. But anyway, it got me thinking about solar. So I have my Volkswagen solar panels connected to my 12-volt 7-amp-hour gel cell battery. It's been kind of trickle charging and for a long time here. And well, I connected it up to the MEPD-PT beacon, and we went solar on 30-meter QRSS. Worked for about a week, and then I and then I kind of ran out of batteries. I guess the FSK transmission, because it's key down all the time, it after a few days it kind of drained down the battery, and I don't think I'm getting enough in the way of photons here this time of year to keep it going all around. So I might have to go back on the grid with the MEPT transmitter. I'm sorry. We tried to prevent my 50 milliwatt transmitter from damaging the planet, but I'm going to have to get some bigger solar panels. Billy's working on a windmill. We got a windmill kit project, so we're definitely going green here, and it is fun to kind of incorporate environmentally friendly technology into the shack. So more solar panels. I don't know if Billy's wind generator is going to generate a lot, but it's more for experimental purposes, but we'll see what we can do. Speaking of MEPTs, and QRSS, Eldon, our man out there on the West Coast, has produced a really amazing ET phone home machine. Eldon, we were talking about this, about trying to get the transistor count down to one, and Eldon has come up with a great way to do it. And anyway, hold on. Wait 1 second here. We got to get Maria Patricia in a comfortable spot. All right. Eldon has taken up our challenge of producing an ET phone home machine for QRSS and MEPT, and has built something. One of the really admirable parts of it is that it involves an actual circular saw blade, similar to the one used in the ET machine, made famous in the Steven Spielberg movie. And Eldon's is water powered. You put a bunch of water in it, and then it's described in his on his webpage, and I've got the whole thing, or the essence of it, up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. You know, check it out. Great pictures. The saw blade's there. And Eldon has actually put this thing on the air, and you could see the resulting waveform on the screen there. Great stuff. You know, recently there was an incident somewhere, I think out in Iowa, where for some reason the police had to come into a ham shack, and they found some of this strange stuff in the ham shack, and they concluded that some of it was kind of a terrorist bomb related, so they detonated this poor guy's piece of equipment. I don't know what it was, an antenna tuner or a ballon or something got detonated by the authorities. And when I read this thing, I said, holy cow, I'm glad they don't come into my shack, because they'd blow this place up for sure. It's very suspicious looking. When friends and neighbors come in, you could see the eyebrows shooting right up. The authorities would definitely blow up my shack. And Eldon's water-powered ET phone home machine is in similar danger. Hey, Eldon, don't let the authorities see this thing. Or maybe you want to put a big label on it, ham radio equipment, if that would help. I don't know. All right, but congratulations to Eldon and his ET phone hall machine. Guys, I'm working on a similar project here. Mine is nowhere near as spectacular as Eldon's, but Billy and I went down to the Trastevere flea market, I think it was last week or the week before, and I found this big box of little clock mechanisms, you know, replacement clock mechanisms, and they had a second hand on them. So I'm rigging up now, and I'm about done with it. I've made some initial tests, and it's working to use one of these little cheap clock mechanisms to generate, you know, two or three letters of Morse code, and then I'm going to hook it up to the QRSS beacon transmitter, and then maybe come up with a single transistor to get the entire transistor count for the whole shebang down to one. And I'll put a picture up of this thing. I think it's kind of interesting. Not nearly as interesting as Eldon's, but interesting and perhaps a bit more reproducible. Eldon's, I think, is probably going to be one of a kind. But Eldon, thanks for sending that along. Really interesting. Now I want to report something else. Our the Wizards of Catalonia EA3FXF. And EA3GHS. These are the guys who brought us the flea from Catalonia. The Catalonian flea have now come up with a Mosquito. M-O-S, capital M-O-S, Quito. Get it? Mosquito. And it uses a single IRF 510 for as both the transmitter and the receiver. They take audio out of the, I guess the receiver is kind of in direct conversion mode. They take the audio out of it and run it through the computer for some audio signal processing, SDR, DSP kind of stuff. But still, a single IRF 510 is being used there, and it looks like really, really great stuff. So check out the Mosquito by EA3FXF and EA3GHS. I have it up on the Blogspot page. They've got a real nice presentation. The video is in Spanish, but you'll all be able to follow it through the universal language of knack victims and schematic diagrams. And I think you'll enjoy it. Very interesting. And thanks for that, guys. Another great contribution from Catalonia. Let's see. What else we have here? Let's see. What should I do first? Oh, you're not gonna. This is amazing. You know, I have a Google alert set up on the computer. You guys know about Google alerts. You put in any word or phrase or subject that you want to track and you want to see what's going on out there. You put in a Google phrase and a phrase, and then Google will report back to you anytime this word is used on a website or on the internet or it pops up in the news. And I have one out there. I use it at work for different things that we watch at work. But I, at home here, I have a Google alert set up for solder smoke because I want to see whenever solder smoke is mentioned on a blog page or anything else like that. And every once in a while, I get a little Google alert message, and it's usually somebody mentioning the show on their own blog or on their own website or something like that. I'm always pleased to see that and see the comments. The other day, I get a really weird one. And it's a commercial thing, and solder smoke, and spelled pretty much the way we smell it. We spell it, it's, get this, it's for a cologne. Can you imagine this? It's some company out there has developed a solder smoke cologne. It's from a new line of fragrances that they call Men at Work. And they've got basically what they're trying to sell is a cologne that you could, you know, slap on in the morning, an aftershave or something, and then you'll go through the day smelling, I guess, like, I don't know, 60-40 rosin core solder. this is amazing. The depths that the marketing guys will go to try to sell something. But I thought of you guys. It's just... it's something I could sell on the, I guess on the on the solder smoke, t-shirt store or something like that. You could buy, I suppose I could make a deal with them, and you guys can buy solder smoke t-shirts and hats and bumper stickers and travel mugs. And hey, why not? Solder smoke, the fragrance. Ooh, the solder smoke. I'm going to put up a link to this on the Blogspot page because you guys have got to see this thing. And please check it out in the next few days and let me know what you think. Solder smoke, the fragrance from the Men at Work collection. Anyway, okay, check that out and let me know what you think. All right. Another thing going on here, I got a great book recommendation. It came up by a QRP.L from N7ZWY. Our man in the Sonoran Desert, Chris Trask, it was a book recommendation for a book about, well, mostly about Marconi, but also about a murder. It's kind of a combination murder mystery history of radio book, and it's called Thunderstruck by Eric Larson. I have a link to it up on the blog page, and I'm really enjoying this book. This is really great. I've read a lot about Marconi in the early days of radio, but Eric Larson really has come up with some stuff that I didn't know that wasn't really highlighted in some of the other books I've read. And, you know, we recently discussed Empire of the Air. That wasn't really focused so much on Marconi, but Thunderstruck is. And really great stuff in there. You gain insights into the young Marconi that I didn't get anywhere else, and I put one of them the other day up on the Blogspot page, and it's kind of Marconi family legend or Marconi family lore. When he was born, a few days after he was born, an elderly gardener at the house looked into the cradle and saw him and said, "Wow, what big ears he has!" And of course, his mother didn't like that, and she took offense, and she said, "Well, with those big ears, he'll hear the faint whispers from the air." And it seemed all very prophetic, and it seemed kind of cute. So I liked it. Also, they describe how Marconi got his big idea, and his big idea was to use radio waves, Hertzian waves, for communications purposes. People had been discussing these waves and studying them, and Faraday did the original experiments that predicted them. Maxwell worked out the math, and a few years later, Heinrich Hertz in the laboratory actually produced Hertzian waves. But nobody really had thought about using it for communications purposes, and that was Marconi's big idea. Thunderstruck points out that Marconi got this idea at age 20. The family had gone from their home in Bologna, in northern Italy, further north into the Alps. It was summertime, and they were trying to beat the heat, so they went up into the mountains. And while he was on that summertime vacation, he read the obituary of Heinrich Hertz. And in the obituary, they described Hertz's work. Marconi had been a knack victim from a much younger age. He had been playing with electricity for many years. The book pointed out that he was very possessive about it. He referred to it as my electricity. And even as a young kid, he was very interested in electricity and electrical experiments. Of course, radio and wireless came much later. And that kind of started with his reading at the age of 20. And this would be 1894 because he was born in 1874. So in 1894, he read about the death of Heinrich Hertz, and through the obituary got the idea for using wireless and using Hertzian waves for communications purposes. So when they got back to Bologna, he started his tinkering intensified, and his mother, Annie, his mother was Irish. His mother decided that he needed a special place for his experiments, for his work. And I think, gentlemen, that was the birth of the original Radio Shack, the shack as we know it. She got his father to agree to give him an attic room upstairs at the house in Bologna, and that became the first shack, and that's where Marconi did his experiments and really built the first rig. Great stuff. I mean, I really like this book. I recommend it. Check it out. A lot of fun. Thunderstruck by Eric Larson. And we've got an Amazon link on it up there on the website. So I think you'll enjoy it. Let's see. What else do we have here? Marconi, mosquitoes, Thunderstruck, solder sense, solar power. That's all we have on the list. We have a solder smoke Echo QSO this week, a really good one. I really enjoyed. We've been talking to Nigel M0NDE. I guess we could say he's our man in Dover. Nigel's got an amazing job that takes him across the English Channel, actually under the English Channel. Very often he works for Her Majesty's government, and he works on both sides of the channel, both sides of the tunnel, both sides of the channel, both sides of the channel. There you go. And he's got the best of both worlds. He's deeply involved in an amazing radio club on the UK side, the Dover Construction Club, and he describes how they operate. It's definitely the kind of club that we would all like to be a member of. They actually get together and build things. They share equipment. They share test gear, and they have amazing projects going on. So I think you'll enjoy Nigel's description of that, and also the club that he's active with on the French side. Seems like a real great bunch of guys there. I think you'll all, as I was, be kind of jealous of Nigel's lifestyle there and his ability to do ham radio on both sides of the English Channel. So without further ado, let's go to the Echo Link discussion that I had with Nigel M0NDE last week.
M0NDE. This is N2CQR in Rome. Good morning, Nigel. Your audio is sounding quite good. Go ahead.
I'm pleased to hear that, Bill, because I had a bit of a panic on. I walked down to the living room, turned on the light, the bulb blew. I then looked for my favourite set of headphones and couldn't find those, and grabbed another set, which sounded pretty poor to me, and then finally looked on my six-year-old's Walkman to find my headphone set had mysteriously walked across there, and she was playing pretend radios with it, obviously, yesterday. But anyhow, we've got the shack in a semi-sort of order over here, Bill. Back to you.
Okay, Nigel, real good. Well, things can disappear in the shack because of the activities of the shack assistants. I have one of them with me right now, Maria Patricia, age 8, almost 9, sitting here with me. I'm glad to hear your voice booming in from Dover. I've been having a good morning in the shack, Nigel, and you know what I'm talking about here. They're almost all always good, but some of them can be frustrating and unsuccessful, and some of them can be really good. We had a major breakthrough on the computer front. Kevin down in New Zealand has been helping me bring back to life an old Toshiba Satellite Pro 400. This is a laptop that was the kind of cutting edge in 1995, but it's been a while. I liked the thing. I don't know. I had some sort of a sentimental attachment to it, and it's been sitting here broken for 2 or 3 years. It broke when we were in London, and I just, for some reason, you know how it is, a piece of gear that's not working, and it could work, and it could be useful. You think that I could do useful things with that. I could run beacons off of that thing. I could do something with that, and it's just sitting there. So I got motivated last week to get this thing going, and Kevin down in New Zealand and Ron Sparks in Dubai have been giving me advice on getting it going, and going it is. It's sitting here working this morning, so brought back from the computer dead. What are you working on there in Dover? What's happening in the shack? Are you melting any solder? M0NDE, N2CQR.
N2CQR, M0NDE. Well, that's good news on the Toshiba. We've had some computer adventures here in the run-up to getting back to talk to you. Good morning, of course, to Maria Patricia. None of my shack assistants are up at the moment. They're still in the land of Nod, but then we are a little way behind you in time. The shack adventure here came about with, I thought I was going to talk to you last weekend, and we did a machine rebuild here, which turned out to be a bit of a nightmare, but with the help of some of my friends, particularly Steve, 2E0 SPF, we managed to resurrect my Vista machine from the dead as well. So, but IT is such an important part of running your radio station, it seems. One of the things that we used to do years ago was manage without computers and mobile phones, but it's almost an essential thing here. Well, in terms of the shack, the progress continues with the construction of the shack. We've had some hiccups with the planning department, but these are being overcome. And I've mentioned to you before my plan to try and run the shack off-grid. I'm going to have a few solar panels. I've got two in mind that are sitting redundant at the moment, not working, and a large leisure battery, which I managed to rescue from my caravan. And so that will be used to run the main radios whenever I want to transmit or receive. I do have an FT897, and that runs on its own batteries, but my plan is to just do my small bit for the house and say there's minimal carbon impact on the house from my shack. Try and push aside some of those comments about all the power that must be being used by my hobby. The other thing that's a decision has been made that we are going to go D-Star in this shack. So whilst you're going down to the one transistor level, we're going to go into the thousands of transistor level on our kit here, purely to have a play and try and get some understanding about this newer technology. So back to you, M0NDE.
All right, M0NDE and 2CQR. Well, very interesting. Yeah, well, the green shack, that's you know, that, I think that's something that interests all of us, for a variety of reasons. The idea that you're homebrewing your own electricity is somehow appealing. You know, if you look at the ARRL publications going way back, I mean, I have QRP Classics here, and there's all kinds of articles about, you know, going off the grid and solar power and wind power. Of course, I have my two Volkswagen solar panels in the window here. They don't get too much sun, but it's enough to trickle charge or periodically top up my little 12-volt, 7-amp-hour gel cell. And it was suggested to me this week that I take my QRSS beacon and take it offline, and this would prevent the periodic power outages here from causing my FSK signal to flatline on ON5EX's screen up there in Belgium. I think that's a good idea. So for a number of reasons, I think I might go solar, at least with the QRSS portion of the station. And you're actually constructing a shack. That is, when I turn it over, you tell me, is it a separate building out in the back in the old style of Radio Shacks? Or is it just a room, an additional room, or what? I mean, describe that a little bit. That'd be interesting. Yeah, and I'm going in the opposite direction, I think, with the one transistor rigs. Oh, but before I get off solar power, I don't know if you saw, but I put up a video on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com about how to make solar panels out of donuts and tea. And I thought the tea bit would be of particular interest to our UK listeners, because it's always good to find another use for a cuppa, you know. And these kids, I think they were Canadian. I got the sense that they sounded a bit Canadian in the video, but they figured out how to make solar panels out of donuts and tea. And at first, I thought this was some sort of a pull on that they put on. They were kidding us that they were. That this was some sort of a joke, but apparently it's not. The video is very well done, and they I don't know how efficient they are, but they made solar panels out of donuts and tea. So you might want to try to get some tea-based solar panels involved in your shack there, Nigel. And my computer, well, it's now running Windows 3.1. Yes, Windows 3.1. I've got a Pentium 75 megahertz processor in there, 40 megs of RAM, and 4.5 gigs of hard drive. This is, again, I've returned. I'd be on the cutting edge of about 1993 or 1994. I already have a use for it. I have an astronomy program running on it, and I couldn't run this thing on any of the more advanced machines, but now it's running. It's sitting over there. I am one happy radio computer guy, as you said. It's all mixed together these days. But I do hope to get back to single transistors. And with D-Star, I think you're in the millions of transistor range there, Nigel. M0NDE, N2CQR.
N2CQR, M0NDE. I just made a couple of notes while you were talking. The shack is, as far as the good lady of the house is concerned, is also... part of our dining room. It's a conservatory type construction being put out the back, but I've been guaranteed space out there to put my Radio Shack in, and so I've got exclusive use of one end of it, and so that's my shack. It's better than where I am at the moment, which is finding any free space in the house where there's not other activities going on. I've got three girls living at home, and it can get a bit noisy with all those mobile phones and MP3s going. On solar power, well, I did look at that video. I'm not sure if that came from Hackaday, but it was interesting to see the way that they did it, with scraping the donuts and dipping in the tea. I thought it was a wind-up as well. When I saw the guy at the beginning and I saw the safety glasses being put on when they were putting the little panel in the oven, I thought, no, this is going to be a wind-up. It's not going to work. But the guys were serious, and they did manage to produce some current out of those panels. And I did see at the end that their plan is to try and develop it further and improve the product. I think the sugar off the donuts and the tea was a starting point rather than an end point. But very interesting. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to get to the desired temperature. They had to bake the item up to 500 degrees C, and they had a special oven for doing that in. But fine business with them. At least they're challenging the multi-million-dollar panel industry with donuts and tea. But back to you. This is M0NDE.
Oh, I thought it was great. And the other thing about it, it's very the way they did it. It was, I think, a very appealing for kids. As soon as Billy woke up yesterday morning, I dragged him in here. I said, "You got to see this. You got to see this." And we sat there and watched it, and it was filled with all kinds of quick little jokes and snippets of video. And they managed to get Homer Simpson in there, and I think these guys are onto something. I think they have some additional videos up there. I haven't taken a look at them, but I want to because it looks like it was a really well done video. And like you said, you start out thinking, man, they're pulling my leg here, but no, it was for real. And I did get it from Hackaday. Hackaday is a great source of ideas and inspiration. And so Elliot and the guys over there do a great job. And I spotted that and immediately decided that this is the kind of thing that needs to be embedded in the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. And I've already gotten some comments back on it. People like that one. Well, fine on the shack. You definitely need a space. You know, a man needs a shack there. And I think it's going to be... well, Maria wants to tell me something. What? Oh, she's speaking of cell phones. Yeah. Maria's searching for cell phones on the other computer. Very apropos what you just said about your shack situation. It's a very pink cell phone, Maria. Is that what you want? Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'm getting into the same stage. We'll be having the same kind of audio frequency interference here very soon, Nigel. Maria is turning 9 on Monday. Anyway, well, fine on the shack. It sounds like it's going to be great out in the conservatory. You'll have a view of the outdoors, and it you know, out in the conservatory like that is an appropriate place for the shack because that's where we were in the beginning. In the old days, I think we were sent out to the backyard to a separate building because those spark transmitters just made too much noise and they were too dangerous to have in the family residence. So you're returning to ham radio roots here. Marconi and the Radio Shack and all that. Nigel, listen, I wanted to ask you. You have a really interesting and lifestyle for ham radio. I know that you essentially live on both sides of the channel, and you've got good ham radio friends on both sides. Maybe we could talk a little bit about first of all, about your club on the UK side, because it seems like you guys have the kind of club that we all want to be in. It seems like you've gone beyond the no rules, no Robert's Rules of Orders, no officers, no dues. Many clubs have gone to that model, but I think you guys have actually gotten to the point where that when you meet, you build things together and you work on projects and you have kind of tools and test gear that you share. Tell us about this group, because I when you told me about it before, I was really envious, and this might spark some ideas for other people. M0NDE N2CQR.
N2CQR, M0NDE. Yeah, but we'll have to come back to the committee issue and the regulated club a bit later on, because I've got some news there which may astound you given our previous conversations. Happy birthday to Maria Patricia for Monday. Let's not forget that. That's important. And a final comment about your PCs. I once did a race between a spreadsheet doing several thousand calculations using Windows 3.1 DOS-based Excel and a newer version of Windows, and hands down, the old machine beat the new Windows version because it was too busy playing with graphics instead of getting on with the calculations. So that's a lesson to be learned from the past. So you stick with your Satellite Pro for those sorts of jobs. I think you'll find it will do a splendid job for you. Now let me tell you about our construction club. I live in Dover, and although I work across on the other side of the channel in France and have access to some other radio clubs, one particular club that I go to on a Thursday night is called Dover Construction Club. Now, we haven't taken a leaf out of the American shed culture, because I think this club has been going for certainly in excess of 14 years. We have a small workshop, which is part of a whole series of workshops up at my friend's house. And this workshop is specifically designed, would be perhaps too strong a word to use, but it's been turned over to construction of QRP radios and aerials and the like. We keep ourselves away from the public gaze, which is sometimes the best thing. My friend Chris came down from London, and he looked in the door and he could hear the noises of radios being tweaked up, the beeps of Morse, and he said, "Hey, you guys are like the chaps from the TV program, The Last of the Summer Wine. You know, a little bit scary. There's things going on in there that are best kept behind the doors and out of sight for the gaze of the general public." We build rigs. Basically, there's no set format as to what rigs we build. We decide what we're going to build for the year, or maybe just fix something for the week. Aerials is a favourite item to be building. We've got access to computers in there, so we can do ESNEC tests before we actually cut some wire. And we've got a range of equipment which is second to none, I think. We've got, between all of us, we have metal benders, milling machines, lathe, all the test equipment one would need generally to fix radios. And best of all, the thing we can say to our wives is that we're not down the pub. We're not wasting valuable pennies in slot machines and swilling beer. And what we're doing is a calm, accepted hobby for radio amateurs. Back to you, Bill.
Indeed, you're not down at the pub. That's the important point. Although that'll only get you so far. We're now joined by Billy. He's sitting here. He's reading the Groovy Greeks and the Rotten Romans, because they're studying ancient civilizations, and it's very appropriate because we live in the midst of one here. Wow, that is the club. That's the club that we all want to be in. That's the club where you go down to the meeting and you melt solder and you share gear and commiserate and share in the triumph that comes when something works. So that'd be fantastic. There's a group they don't actually build something, but I was a member, I guess I still am, of the Nova QRP Club in Northern Virginia. And that was very much a no rules, no committees, no dues, no officers kind of organization. We got together once every couple months in a restaurant out there outside Washington, D.C. And we did kind of a show and tell. There was no actual construction because we met in the restaurant, and that would be kind of rough. But there was a lot of show and tell, and guys brought rigs in and shared stuff and got parts, and it was a lot of good fellowship there. But all right. So I mean, that's the kind of club we'd all like to be in. So what are some of the projects that the club members have going, Nigel? You mentioned a receiver that's been in the works for quite some time, and tell us what some of the other guys have on the collective bench right now. M0NDE N2CQR.
N2CQR M0NDE. Good morning, Billy. Just to mention, Billy, your strep throat has crossed the channel now. I was hoping that you may have got rid of it. It's travelled so far, it must have left you by now. Okay, we'll have a quick rundown of who's been in the shack recently and what they're working on. The shack founder is Ian, G3ROO. He's probably quite well known in the radio world. There's a company on both sides of the Atlantic called Kanga Products, and he hosts that club. He's no longer involved with Kanga Products, but of course, it's all in his brain, these circuit designs and these ideas, and he continues to develop new ideas. Indeed, if you look in Spratt, you'll see that he's been involved in a lot of development of aerials and some radio projects throughout the years, and he's probably quite well known for some of those. His project at the moment is a linear. He started this linear, I think, about 2 years ago, and there was an incident with very high power and MFJ analyzers being left on the end of aerials, so that got abandoned, but he's resurrected it. A couple of the interesting things he's got on that is the tuning has a home-brewed chain drive. He couldn't get the gearing that he wanted to adjust the capacitors in there, and so he found a small chain similar to a chain he'd find on a very small bicycle, and he's used that to construct part of it. It's in a nicely worked metal case. As I mentioned, we've got this metal folder. We can bend metal to any size we want, and it's got one of those beautiful valves inside, those with a copper bellows moving in and out. I just love those. Even just to have one, not necessarily doing anything, but sat on the shack desk, it's a beautiful work of art. That capacitor. Tony is infamous for the long term development of a transmitter receiver. We pull his leg about whether he'll ever finish it, but it's getting near. It's getting close. There's been a few revisions along the way. It's no longer a transmitter receiver. It's now just a receiver. It did have a digital dial, but I think a spanner dropped or something dropped from a shelf onto the digital chips, because we keep reminding Tony to cover up this valuable piece of equipment at the end of the session. But we think it's 14 years. We think it's 14 years from first thoughts of building the radio till now. But Tony is G4XDW, and as I say, he's nearing completion, so we're going to have to find him something new to work on, something to keep him occupied for the next 14 years. Merv, M0MIA. Like me, he's working on Softrock 6.3. He's working on 6.3 PA board. I'm just going to drop the carrier and pick it up. Yes, we kind of shied away from this digital side for a while. We were backing traditional QRP construction, but we then looked, this is Ian, myself and Merv, looked at how good this filtering is that you can achieve with a PC with these little Softrock radios. And perhaps a reminder to you, Bill, you need to get that soldering iron and that eyeglass out, pull that Softrock kit down that Tony sent to you. Steve, 2E0SPF, he's the youngest member of the club, which is really good. He takes a lot of stick from Ian when he's not constructing things right, which means us older guys can quickly cover up the mess that we've made with our wiring, because Ian is meticulous about the way that wiring should be done, so you can always lift boards out. None of this spider's web of tangled wires. It's all got to be neatly laced around the edge, and everything goes to one side, so you can tip a board up in safety without ripping cables. So he's working on a power supply. Paul, M0YMJ, he's converting an FT101 to AM-only transmitter, I believe. I think that's what he's working on. Norman, M3RPN, like me, we've both got the Milton Keynes Amateur Radio Society 80-meter FSB kit. So we started construction on that. I'm kind of mentoring Norman through his construction at the moment, so we're moving slowly but surely on that one. And quickly, he became interested in Morse, so we had to knock up a Morse paddle. In the end, we did it with some pieces of plastic from a child's ruler and a few nuts and bolts and a piece of wood. We fabricated a Morse paddle over in the space of about an hour. He had to have a paddle straight away, and so we made one. And it's actually working fine, and he's practicing on it as we speak, but certainly most evenings he's playing around, and he's got himself a paddle for less than a quid. It's not too bad. And myself, yeah, I'm working on this 6.3 PA board at the moment before I move into the transmitter receiver. And because young Stephen is moving away from the area, we were talking about how are we going to maintain comms, and we came up with all sorts of wacky ideas and links and high power beams and all this sort of thing. But we're going to try the new technology. We're going to try D-Star, because we're both within the coverage of a D-Star repeater, and we've been blown away by some of the capabilities of these D-Star rigs, which are truly, truly fantastic. So we've got, on the one hand, we've got the QRP, the low-level 2 or 3 transistor units, and then we've got these D-Star systems, which are going to rely, as you mentioned before, on millions and millions of transistors. Back to you. This is M0NDE.
Oh, wow. Now that is a radio club. Congratulations. Yeah, and I recognize G3ROO's call. I think I've built several rigs that he wrote up in Spratt, I think. I may be confusing them, but it sounds like this the same guy. And I didn't catch the connection between Kanga and Rue. There you go. All right, very interesting. Wow. That's the kind of club we'd all like to be in. Congratulations to all of you. I do hope you manage to use the D-Star connection to keep touch with the fella who's moving away. Here, let's see. I've had some success this week. I kind of made up my mind to get back to making some ordinary, real two-way ham radio contacts, and it's been a big success for me. And every morning I get on early on 80 and 40 and make one or two contacts each morning. And it's been very, very useful and very productive. The most useful or interesting contact I think I made on the 15th, I ran into I0FYL, Luca. And Luca is here in Rome. And we met up on 40 meters CW. He's only about 2 miles from me, and this means that he's probably in range for my single FET transceiver, the ET1 or the FET-er that's been in Spratt recently. And I was exchanging emails with Wes, W7ZOI, this week, and we were talking about minimalist transceivers and kind of the joys and frustrations of going very, very low in the transistor count. And I confess to Wes that there's a lot of frustration with it. So I've kind of made up my mind that with this FE tier, I want to make just at least one contact. And after that, I'll be satisfied and we'll be able to put it on the shelf and declare mission accomplished. I don't think I'm going to make this my regular rig. The regen receiver is not for the faint of heart. I think I've just been, somebody said to me, I've been spoiled by the Drake 2B. So I think it'll be back to super hats and well, multiple transistors. But we'll see. Hey, all right, now we've talked about the UK side of your life. Now, you spend a lot of time on the other side. Maybe tell us a little bit about radio from the French side. M0NDE, N2CQR.
N2CQR, F0NDE. Yes, I suppose I've been really fortunate in turn of events as you change your jobs. I spent many years in IT and stuck near London, and I've had some changes, which I decided to come down to the coast. And after a couple of other jobs, I managed to get myself a job which enables me to travel across to France. And I go across there usually on a daily basis, but on some occasions I stay out there for longer. And it was on some of those occasions last year, I decided I'd look around and see what are the clubs doing in France. And I was staying in beyond Calais, up in towards Dunkirk, and I made some contacts on 2 meters and asked around who was around and what was going on there. And it turns out that there are two clubs in the Dunkirk area. Amateur radio is kind of, I would say, in trouble in a way in France, because it's got the same problem that you find in many other areas where the existing members of the club are getting older, and they're trying to bring in new people as well. So they're trying to deal with that, and they've changed some of the way they do their examinations. They're doing their examinations online and trying to attract new members. But I went to a club in Dunkirk, in Capelle-Lagrande. It's a small commune outside of the main town of Dunkirk. And I was quite amazed at the way they've set up their radio club. The traditional radio club, quite similar to the one we have in Dover, where people turn up, sit down, particularly if they're in schoolhouses. This happens very much in Dover, where they sit down and wait for someone to come in and talk to them and have the very sort of traditional type of approach to a club. Well, the FAKGS is like that. They meet 2 days a week. On Wednesdays, they meet around just before lunch, and it seems to me that the primary objective of that radio club on that day is to come in and have a beer and a pizza and talk about what everyone's doing and working on. And then maybe later on they'll settle down and work some radio or get on with whatever it is they're doing. The other time they meet is on a Saturday, and it's run rather than a traditional club of turning up at 7:30 at night and finishing at 9, which is again what we do at Dover. It's more of a drop-in type of environment where if you're free in the morning, well, you might call by the radio club and just pop in and say hello. And if you want to go in and work a contest, well, you go in and do that. If you want to stay there all day, you go and do that, or pop in after lunch. It's so people come and go during the course of the day, which is great to get different views, hear what everyone's working on. So that was good. The other thing is that they've got some exclusive use of some property. The local authority has given them an old schoolhouse, which they've now, we've got about 2 major rooms with some storage off. And so they have a definite construction area, they have a definite meeting area, and they have radios set up all the time, so that when you walk into that club, if you want to go straight onto a radio, you drop down the flap on the storage area, and there's the 2 meter set, the HF set, and as I say, they're geared up for whatever you want to do. If you want to go and surf the net, search out the best price for a new aerial or whatever, then there are several PCs available to do that. And incidentally, on their website, there's pictures of them standing proudly next to their new mast. They now have two masts in the car park area, and so I'm sure they'll be doing some fine contacts from there. But back to you, Bill, M0NDE.
All right, well, very interesting. Yeah. That the best of both worlds there on both sides, Nigel. Yeah, that's great. I think I mentioned on Solder Smoke, I've been a member of a radio clubs. Let's see, in the suburbs of New York City, I stopped by briefly at the radio club in Panama City, Panama. Radio. I was deeply involved in the Dominican Radio Club of the Dominican Republic. Went a few times to the radio club out in the Azores, but they met too late for me. I had our kids were even smaller at the time, and their radio club schedules were a bit late in the evening for me out in the Azores. But I always regret that I didn't get involved in a club in central London. I was never able to find a club in central London. Of course, I'm a longtime member of GQRP, but when you're in central London, there weren't a lot of members really close by. So, here in Italy, they have Audi, and I've been to one club meeting with Audi, but it was a bit far away, and so I'm looking for kind of like-minded QRP-oriented homebrew people, NAC victims here in central Rome, but it's a bit like central London. There's not a lot. You don't see a lot of antennas around. There's a few guys around, I know from internet contacts, but not too many. I guess it's one of the consequences of living in the center of town. You don't run into a whole lot of ham radio folks. Wow, you've got a lot going there with two clubs, the new shack, all kinds of projects. Yeah, the soft rock, it's the box is sitting here, it's looking at me. And you know, the other day Billy out was walking down the street here in Rome and found a PC board that must have fallen. It looks like a bit of old computer. Probably somebody was taking an old computer to the dump, and this little circuit board jumped out, and it's got all the surface mount parts on it. And I said, wow, you know, I've been thinking about doing the SDR, and I saw this thing, and I said, man, those parts are small. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it eventually. I'm really I'm grateful for them for having sent the kit to me. But I think I need some preparation here. And we'll have to do some preparation before I actually take the plunge into not so much into SDR, but into surface mount. That's one of the things I'm a little bit concerned about. Also, my computer situation here is a bit old and rickety, and you know, you can imagine. I don't think the 3.1 machine would be too good with the SDR rigs. Nigel, it's been great talking to you. I kind of got to get going here. The family is up. We've got some activities. Maria's asking me questions about her computer. She's got a screen now with all kinds of Chinese characters on it, so she needs some help. I want to see what else I could do with this 3.1 machine. And but it's been great talking to you, and I know the Solder Smoke listeners are going to be very happy to hear about the clubs on both sides and all the projects. And wow, it's been great. M0NDE, N2CQR.
N2CQR, M0NDE. Yeah, finally, Bill, I'll just mention a couple of things. I think you shouldn't be scared about getting into this surface mount. There's not much to it once you start. The first couple of capacitors you put down, you think, oh, this is very small work. But yeah, I think you'll find you'll soon populate the board. And it's just a matter of scale. There's nothing really to be scared of. And the final thing I was going to mention to you, we were talking about formalized radio clubs. Well, this week I've managed to get myself on the committee of Dover Amateur Radio Club, and I guess I've crossed over that divide. Perhaps we'll have to wait and see. Anyhow, fine business on everything that you're working on, and let you get on now with all the things that are happening. I guess my crew will be getting up reasonably soon, so I'll be into the same family things as you, and we've got a busy day ahead of us. Bill, it's been really good to talk to you. Good fun, and hope you find some of your contacts, someone who's into QRP very close. I'm sure there must be somebody around. They're probably going through the same thoughts as you are. There's got to be someone else out there who's a victim of the knack. The knack victims are around. We've just got to find out where they hide. Cheers, Bill. Have a good day in Rome. This is M0NDE from the White Cliffs of Dover. Cheerio.
All right, there you go. Speaking of Thunderstruck, there's a little bit of thunder. I couldn't resist using some of the sound effects from the old Satellite Pro computer. There you go. So I've actually used it here. Time for...
Sorry, smoke mail bag.
Indeed. Paul, M0XPD, reports that he's been in radio, in ham radio, for only 1 year, but he's already a successful home brewer. He built his own homebrew, scratch-built version of VE7 BPO's Funster 40, and he's also built a very impressive-looking tube valve paraset transmitter, a transceiver. He sent pictures of them both. I'm going to try to get him up on the blog. Really great stuff. And he's also... he's also got a software-defined radio SDR rig going, and he's using LT Spice in all of his work. Very fine business. Thanks for that, Paul. Keep up the good work. Preston WJ2V writes in response to my tale of woe about the by now infamous IC replacement story, in which I soldered the chip in upside down. Preston recommends that we move away from these kind of gimmicky solder sucker things that we all have, you know, these kind of spring-driven solder sucker things. You hit the spring, you hit the button, it slurps up a bit of the solder. He says that he went ahead and got himself a true vacuum pump desoldering machine, and he says basically it changed his ham radio life forever. He strongly recommends it. That you get one of these machines. He points out that some of them are available used at reasonable prices. He has replaced the motor on his once or twice just because it's so important for him to have it around, and it does sound like a real joy to use. And I certainly could have used one when I was dealing with that chip, Preston. So thanks for recommending that. Ted Alpha Alpha 5 LK is using a version of Arduino called Iduino. To key his QRSS transmitter. So that sounds all very interesting. Thanks for that, Ted. Ken, KG6PO, sent in the obituary of TV pioneer Thomas T. Goldsmith. And that was very interesting. And I'll try to get that up on the blog page if I can also. Art, W2HQQ, sent in a very interesting report. We had mentioned another book about Howard Armstrong called Armstrong, Man of High Fidelity. And I had noted that this book is available online. And Art found another online version of it and read through it. Our question was whether this book would be of higher technical accuracy than Empire of the Air. I had found Empire of the Air to be a bit lacking in the knack department. It lacked the knack. And we thought maybe that Man of High Fidelity might be a bit better. Art reports that it's not, that it's that the author was not a technical person or didn't have a high level of technical understanding of Armstrong's work. So he was more of a neighbor who'd been around for many years with Armstrong. So a good book, I'm sure, but not really the kind of technical knackish stuff that we were more interested in. Scott, KD5NJR, sent in information on Sputnik 4. Sputnik 4 was the satellite that at one point the brothers up there in Turin had been tracking during the early days of the space program. Very interesting on that. Also, a history of NASA communications techniques. I'm having trouble with my Adobe software here. Once I get the Adobe thing squared away, I'm gonna fire that up and read that. Scott, thanks for sending that along. Always interested in the information that you send. Alan, W2AEW. This is another guy with a really great job for ham radio. Field application engineer for Tektronix. Alan roams the Northeast, helping people with advanced Tektronix spectrum analyzers and oscilloscopes and things like that. And while he's driving, he gets to do ham radio mobile work. Great stuff. He comments on the dangers of fully insulating oscillators in QRSS MEPT transmitters. He makes a real good point. I mean, I think some of us have been thinking, well, we can avoid the whole crystal oven thing just by insulating the wrapping in the oscillators in bubble wrap or styrofoam and just kind of putting them under a real kind of thermal blanket there. He points out that's not a good idea because what you need really is thermal equilibrium. And if you put a whole lot of insulation around these things, there's going to be a little bit of heat generated by the device, and that heat is going to have nowhere to go, and it's actually going to cause the temperature to kind of build up around the oscillator, and that's not what you want. So I think that's a really important point. My transmitter has no insulation of any kind, no thermal wrapping, no styrofoam of any kind, and it sits there rock solid at 10140050 day in and day out. So I think a lot of the discussion about the need for insulation and especially crystal ovens might be a bit overdone. Alan also sends us some book recommendations. Troubleshooting Analog Circuits by Robert Pease and The Art of Electronics by Horowitz. I've been trying to get The Art of Electronics for a long time. It's not cheap, and it's not even cheap in the used book market. But I'm going to pick up one of those books one of these days. And the troubleshooting thing by Robert Pease looks really interesting. Also, Alan sent in this really great email with some stories about the use of LTSpice, the perils of simulations, and a great story on a great troubleshooting story. It was so good that I got his permission to excerpt from his email. And I have that up on the blog. Please check that out. There's also a great picture of Alan in his shack. And thanks for the great contributions. Alan's email had a lot of other really good information. I'm going to try to excerpt that and get that on the blog page also. Steve G0FUW, our man in Bath, reports that he's building a 3-band CWSSB transceiver for the WARC bands. Very good, Steve. Get away from those contests. Love the WARC band. 17 meters was my favorite band, and I look forward to getting back to it once we get some sunspots going. Speaking of old books, he found an old book called Basic Electricity by Valkenburg, Neuger, and Neville. Sounds like a law firm, doesn't it? Valkenburg, Neuger, and Neville. Anyway, Basic Electricity, and he said it was published by, and I pause here to go to my new old software. Here we go. Basic Electricity by Valkenburg, Neuger, and Neville was used by the Milwaukee Railroad Company and is still available on Amazon.com. He says it's a really great book, even though it came out in the 40s or 50s. It's a really great book, and it has great descriptions of some of the advanced electronic topics that they take up in the course that Steve is running. So, you know, I'm a big fan of old books. I think we all need kind of a library of old books. You can't really rely on one book or one handbook, even if it's really great. You need several different books, because sometimes when you're trying to understand something technical, the way one author presents it might not be what you're looking for, or it might not address the kind of questions that you have. And if you have a bunch of different books, especially the older books, you can usually find something fairly quickly that answers your particular questions. I have Basic Electronics, an old Navy manual up on the shelf. I have old RSGB handbooks, old AWRL handbooks, the amateur radio encyclopedia. It's good to have a bunch of these different sources, and it certainly sounds like Basic Electricity by Valkenburg, Neuger, and Neville and the Milwaukee Railroad Company is in that category. So thanks for sending that along, Steve. Got an email from Jackie, the wife of our dear departed friend, Mike KL7R. Jackie writes in from Alaska that they've got through the winter and signs of spring are in the air. There's more light now. She points out that the volcanic eruptions up there are a new feature of this spring, and they've had to cancel some airplane flights up there because of the dust. But it was good to hear from Jackie, and I hope you have a good spring there, Jackie. And I hope we get you a copy of this podcast. Got an email from Jeff KO7M, who was with us in the last episode. He's building a QRSS transmitter. Asks a question: Why FSK? Why not straight CW on QRSS and MEPT? And Jeff, I think the answer is in part that with the real sensitive receive software that we're using, any kind of key clicks really show up. For a long time, my signal was referred to as the Italian tears signal, and I had droopy dashes. And the keying, any kind of key clicks becomes really very apparent. FSK gets away from that because it's key down all the time, and you're just shifting the frequency up and down a bit. By the way, Alan, W2AEW, answered my question and said, yes, we should consider FSK CW as a form of frequency modulation. So we're running FM on the 30-meter band. just 5 hertz wide anyway, but so I don't think it'll cause any trouble. But, Jeff, I think that's why we go with QRSS. Plus, it makes a much cooler pattern on the screens. I mean, you could see the regular dashes going across, but the FSK is, I think, much more recognizable. And it just looks it looks cooler. So why not? Finally, I want to note that my good friend Jim, AL7RV, very kindly sent a Whisper care package. I had mentioned my desire to build the simple Whisper transmitter that we had on the blog a while back. And Jim reached into his massive and impressive junk box and sent me the parts needed to build this thing. So I really got to get that going, and I hope to be active on Whisper very soon. Guys, we're approaching the 1 hour mark. I closed the Satellite Pro laptop. I'm glad it made its contribution. And thanks very much, especially to Nigel M0NDE for joining us this week. 73 from Rome. This is